Let me begin by introducing myself. My name is Gordon Finney, and I'm a retired priest from Ontario. My wife Adele and I moved here 2 years ago, and in my last parish we had a very similar service to this, and it was a great joy for us to return a couple of weeks ago and see that service flourishing and as an important part of the life of our parish. So we've worshipped in this at St. Bridget's a couple of times, and it's good to be back with you here tonight. I want us to think about the gospel a little bit tonight. It's a very packed gospel, but I wanted to look particularly at the last part of it. Jesus asks, "Who are my mother and my brothers and my sisters?" As we heard in the text, Jesus is in this crowded house in Capernaum that was his home base. And he was teaching his followers, and these followers are a remarkably diverse group of people, men and women. When word comes to them that his family is outside, they want to speak to him privately. They had heard rumors about what Jesus was doing and saying, and they were concerned. They had heard the whisperings that Jesus had gone out of his mind, and his family had come to take him home to Nazareth to look after him, perhaps, and keep him safe. But Jesus does not go out to them. The text does not even say that he spoke to them. Rather, he answers his own rhetorical question, and in the process states that he is creating something new. He is creating a new family, an unusual family, a family that transcends biology and clan and race and nation. He, Jesus, like a mother, is giving birth to a new family that will do the will of God. "Here are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Here. Whoever does the will of God is my mother and my brother and my sisters." What does that new family look like? Have any of you seen the movie Under the Tuscan Sun? It came out about 15 years ago. Good. I'm glad I'm getting a few nods. It won't be entirely unknown. Came out about 15 years ago and shows, among other things, how an unusual family is formed. It tells the story of Frances Mays, played by Diane Lane. Frances is a successful writer, but when she learns that her husband is cheating on her, her life is turned upside down. And the ensuing divorce leaves her with only about 3 boxes worth of books, a few trinkets, and half the money from the house that they sold. In an attempt to bring her out of a deep depression, her best friend Patty, played by the Canadian actress Sandra Oh, encourages Frances to take a tour of Tuscany. Tuscany gotta make anybody feel better, I think. During that trip, their bus is stopped by an almost biblical flock of sheep in front of a ruined villa that has a for sale sign on it. And the new divorcee impulsively decides to get off the bus and, aided by, as it says in the movie, a sign from God, to purchase this ruined Tuscan villa in a small town, and struggles to start her life anew amid colorful local characters. Now, this sign from God is actually a pigeon pooping on her head. Not exactly the descent of the dove that you might hope for, but it is a sign from God that causes the elderly woman who owns the house to sell it to Frances for much less than the amount that another couple had offered. And in the course of the film, we come to understand that this ruined house is a metaphor for her destroyed life. The colorful characters she encounters become the new and unusual family for which she longs. "Here are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Whoever does the will of God is my mother and my sister and my brother." Now, the characters in this movie are something else. There are three Polish construction workers who rebuild her house under an Italian foreman, and they become the nucleus of her new family. Another character is a flamboyant English woman named Catherine, who looks like something that just stepped out of a Fellini movie. And there is Patty, her pregnant, lesbian, Japanese-American friend, who, when her partner abandons her, shows up at Frances's doorstep and has her baby in the rebuilt house. And another is a wise real estate agent named Mr. Martini, who, when Frances cries that this whole enterprise of restoring a huge three-bedroom villa with a large kitchen seems like a delusional activity for a single woman, encourages her to have faith. "You must have faith," he says. "I am jealous of believers," Frances confides, but she admits that she has become friends with the Virgin Mary, who has become something like a favorite aunt for her. In fact, the Virgin Mary is an enameled picture over her bedstead and by her front door and appears in various parts of the movie, extending the religious theme that underlines this whole rebuilding effort. And then Mr. Martini gives her a statue of San Lorenzo, who he describes as the patron saint of cooks. And so Frances begins to cook, and she cooks for Patty, and she cooks for the new baby. She cooks for the Polish construction workers, and her house becomes filled with laughter. One of the Polish workers is a handsome young man. He inevitably falls in love with a beautiful young girl next door, who's the daughter of a wealthy family. And in a crucial scene in the movie, he tells her family that they are in love, and he asks for their blessing on their marriage. They initially refuse. He is poor. He is foreign. And he seems to have no prospects. And an important discussion about the nature of love ensues. And finally they say, "But he has no family." And Frances steps forward and maternally takes the young man's arm and said, "He has me. I am his family." And for emphasis, she repeats it, "I am his family. Here are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. Whoever does the will of God is my mother and brother and sister." Well, the family relents and give their blessing, and the wedding happens in a lovely little church in the country. But in an interesting directorial decision, we watch the couple not just go through the usual motions of the liturgy. As a priest, it's interesting to see how many movie weddings are skewed towards the vows and really depart from the liturgy entirely. But this wedding focuses on the couple receiving the sacrament in Latin of the body and blood of Christ. It's a very devotional moment in the midst of the play in which this couple joins together in matrimony, while Frances, interestingly, casts her gaze on the local statue of the Virgin Mary, the Holy Mother. The wedding reception is in Frances's garden, where Frances realizes that all the longings of her shattered life have been met. The house of her life has been rebuilt into a home, and she is the mother of a quirky family made up of Poles, Italians, Japanese, English, and Americans. They are religious and irreligious. They are modest and flamboyant. They are homosexual and heterosexual. They are wealthy and they are poor. They are old and they are young, and they are family, marked not only by their wounds, but by their reconciliation, their healing love, and their hope. "Here are my mother and my brother and sisters. Whoever does the will of God is my mother and my brother and my sisters." What does it mean to do the will of God? This is a huge question that we ask many times in our lives, that we need to ask many times in our lives, and that will take different shapes and different answers depending on the context in which it is asked. But in the context of today's gospel, I want to suggest that it means initially one thing, It means many more things, but initially it means one thing. And that one thing is following Jesus. Everyone gathered around Jesus in that house in Capernaum were there because they wanted to be there. You've gathered here this evening because you want to be here. They wanted to follow Jesus. They wanted to learn from him. They wanted to imitate him as best they could. In chapter 1, Jesus calls the fishermen, James and John, and he says, "Follow me," and they follow him. In chapter 2, Jesus says to Levi, the accountant, "Follow me," and he follows them. And soon there is a huge crowd of people, so much that I don't know how you can crowd a house so much you can't even eat. But that's what it says at the beginning of the gospel today. Anyway, this huge gathering of people eventually gather around Jesus, and there are people, the people in this house have questions. There are sick people there. There are political activists there. There are social conformists there. There are people who are off their medication who are there. There are pillars of society. There are all kinds of people gathered in this crowded house around Jesus because they have followed him there. I want to finally just briefly read a little poem by a man named Brian Circio that is called simply, "Follow Me." Someone better than me could do this as a rap, but I'm not even going to try. I met this preacher from Australia. You can hear the rap there. I met this preacher from Australia. He'd read the Bible searching for its dominant themes, and he counted 87 times when Jesus said, "Follow me." Well, you know, that got me thinking. Maybe that's the bottom line of what Christian means, because "I follow Jesus" is deeper than "I believe." Because it doesn't take much to mentally agree with a set of beliefs written down in some creed. Now, don't get me wrong, we need to know what we believe, but lately I've been wondering, am I following Jesus or just believing in Christ? Because I can believe and not change a thing, but following will change my whole life. He never said, "Come, acknowledge my existence," or "Believe in me, I'm the second person of the Trinity." But 87 times he said, "Follow me." But if I'm a follower of Jesus, then why am I such a good life insurance risk? And why, when I do give my giving, do I still keep so much when so much hunger exists? And if I follow Jesus, why do I have so many friends among the affluent and so few among the poor? And if I follow Jesus, why do missiles and guns make me feel secure? And it don't take much to mentally assent to the statement of faith we can confirm and forget, but following will change our lifestyle if we get it. And more, I'm wondering. Following Jesus is the first step in becoming a part of his family. But following is not easy. We each have to figure out what it means for ourselves with courage and prayer and humility. And there will be demons. There will be darkness. There will be demons to be named and dark powers to be bound. There will be eyes that need to be opened and ears that need to be taught how to listen. But there will also be new songs to sing, songs of Moses and the Lamb. And as we follow, we will have strange adventures. But we are all family, his family, so that we do not fight alone, we do not question alone, we do not struggle alone. The walls of the house have been rebuilt. The garden has been restored. The table is full of pasta and fruit and vegetables and wine and pastry. There's cake. The wedding feast has begun, and there is dancing. And here are our mothers and brothers and sisters and fathers and uncles and cousins and aunts. And Jesus, who has called us to follow him, is our brother. Thanks be to God.